coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. Today's survey is of the lessons for the third Sunday in Lent, and they are from Exodus 20 verses 1 through 17, the Psalm is 19, the Epistle lesson is from Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 1 verses 18 through 31, and the Gospel lesson is from the Gospel according to St. John, the second chapter verses 13 through 22. And here's our speaker, David Weber.
Thank you, Jamie. Third Sunday in Lent already, and the texts, I think, more than usual, depend upon each other to develop the theme John's Gospel that the zeal for God's house would consume Jesus. Now, this reading is just so saturated with all sorts of different kinds of meanings that you can't say a whole lot. The contrast is, the context rather, is that the temple, for whatever reason, had been reduced to the rules of the market. And Jesus thought that it needed to be purged. So, in this incident, we get a clear insight that Jesus was dead serious about not serving two masters. You can't serve God and money. And because he was zealous for that truth, he had to die. The enemies of Jesus really were right to see that Jesus was a threat to the temple or to the worship that has given up a desire for God and was ruled by this marketing desire for gold. And Jesus violently exposed the marketers' phony reconciliation of God and money. There cannot be any kind of reconciliation. Jesus, as I said, was dead serious about that. And they believed that the bottom line is that money talks. But the word became flesh because our deepest desire is to hear God talk. And there's the big contrast. There's the either or, that those who believe money talks will not want to, will not desire to hear God talk. So, to satisfy that desire, would require God's presence in a way that would require a new temple. And so from now on, that temple would not be a building. It would be Christ's body, crucified and resurrected. From now on, to satisfy our desire to be in God's presence, Christ's body would replace the temple. Now, as I said, any one of these things could be developed and preached on and thought about. And so I'm going to stop with that and rather go on to see how the other texts deal with this contrast between God and money. The psalm is quite clear that God's teachings are more to be desired than gold. Now that sounds absurd. It sounds absurd to people who think that money talk. It sounds absurd to think to those who want to market the church. But that's what the psalm says, that when we get down to the basic desire of what we truly want, and the contrast is between God and gold, the psalm makes it quite clear that our desire for God runs much deeper. And so the psalm essentially turns the truth of the gospel into a prayer. And so we might ask, how would we ever desire God more than gold? That just seems so absurd and out of this world. And that's exactly what it is. So the psalm says, first of all, it connects the glory of the heavens with the teachings in the temple. Now, when the ancients looked at the beauty of the heavens, they thought they were seeing eternity, because there was a music-like perfection of the heavenly movement. And so the psalm says, when you look in the heavens and you see that perfection, well, you are in the presence of that perfection on earth when God teaches. So there, they would say, they would make it very clear that our desire is not for anything that gold can purchase, because that's always temporary. Our desire is for the eternal. And so the psalm declares that the splendor of the heavens is really, truly experienced on earth when we are in the presence of God's life-sustaining teaching. Now, a good part of me just says, that is such a stretch. When have I treated God's teaching as more impressive than anything on earth? When have I experienced this teaching as the eternal beauty that is seen in the heavens? Well, the psalm goes on. It says next that this connection between the heavens and God's teaching reflects an economy where in our lives we will truly see God's word as more valuable than gold. That word will give us a life that gold cannot give. The psalm is not just throwing out pious and empty words. It really does expect that life itself will bring us to the point where God's word will prove to be more valuable than anything that gold can purchase. So the beauty of the celestial movement is in this economy. You've noticed that no one can sell access to the beauty of the heavens. It cannot be marketed. It is a pure gift of God. And any time life reveals to us that we are in need of the pure gift of God, money becomes absolutely irrelevant. And so our deepest desire is for the eternal. And the psalm concludes by saying God's word is a pure gift, like the gift of the heaven. And it promises, like the heavens promised the ancient world, unlimited wisdom and eternal reward. And the thing that I need to keep in mind is it's not saying this like this is going to take place in eternity. It is making this claim that in this life, we will experience our desire for God's presence to be experienced in the hearing of God's teaching. Now, we go to Exodus and we actually get teaching, the giving of the Decalogue, the law. And in the center of that teaching is the comment that God rested on the seventh day. You see, the difference between God and gold is that God's word can give us a peace that the world of gold cannot give. And that rest or that peace is at the heart of our desire. When we drill down to what we truly desire in life, it is not the excitement or busyness that gold can purchase. It is a peace and a calm and a satisfaction that God's presence gives. So, to those who see rest as the soul's deepest desire, they will understand that the word is more desirable than gold. And the nature of this rest is brilliantly, I think, and concisely conveyed in the prohibitions of the commandments. You see, there is the first commandment makes it quite clear. Those who live in a world that is under God's care, the benefit they have is that they can rest from being responsible for the world. From the very beginning of the existence of God and his presence in our life is a reason to believe that there is rest for the weary soul. All right, so what does rest mean? What is this rest that is more desirable gold than gold? How is it explained in the Decalogue? Well, first of all, there are two commandments against lying, that we don't need to lie about God, and we don't need to lie about each other. Now, we lie because we think that somehow we need to manipulate the truth, otherwise things are going to go badly. The commandments prohibit lying because it's not up to us to worry about how things happen. It's up to us to simply be as truthful as we are able. You see, being able to be truthful allows us to trust. And then we find another source of our rest. It's in the trusting obedience to true authority, the fourth commandment. The true authority being father and mother. You see, when we can trust others, it relieves us of the crushing burden of being totally and absolutely responsible for all that we think and do. To be able to trust others is to be unable to trust others makes us responsible for our weaknesses and our wickedness, and that is a crushing burden. This rest frees us. Also, the commandments conclude from enslaving passions, and it talks about three passions. That where God's word is present, we are free from the passion of lust, the sixth commandment, from the passion of rage, the fifth commandment, and from the passion of acquisitiveness, of thinking that our life depends upon what we own and what gold can buy. See, so, and that last one is interesting, that there are three commands then against the thought that what life depends upon what we owe. And so there's a command against stealing other people's possessions and two commandments against coveting other possessions. So what happens when we are free from all of these responsibilities? The space is cleared to live in God's presence with love and forgiveness. So I just love the way the Decalogue expands on why it is that God is more desirable than gold. Now, I love the honesty of Paul, 1 Corinthians, and he speaks to me when he says, and by the way, the cross is folly. Don't think that it is absolutely clear that when you say you cannot serve God and mammon and that it is better to serve God, that people will nod approvingly. It is folly, but it is the kind of folly in which Paul concludes is where the foolishness of God will prove to be wiser than men and the weakness of God will prove to be stronger than men. But that proof takes some time. So when Jesus violently disrupted the temple's marketing scheme, he put us on notice that trusting God is going to displace the trust that people have in gold. Those who believe in God are really going to experience a peace that nothing else in this world can give. That's what Paul expects. Now, people will say the right words, but deep down inside, they think it's kind of foolish that if it really comes down to a choice between God and gold, that gold's going to win forever. So what would it take to actually authentically and truly and without the self-deception believe that God's word is more desirable than much gold? It's when the material world breaks down. The belief in gold is a belief that the material world is who we really are. And that breaks down when we are confronted by death in its many forms. When we suffer these many forms of death, we suffer this disappointment that the material world has not, in fact, satisfied our deepest desires, and it has proven to be a dead end. Now, this is why Jesus makes it clear, in order for him to establish the new temple on earth, he would have to die. And he would have to die in order for his body to be resurrected. And that would demonstrate how God's word is not subject to death, that we desire God's word more than gold, because gold cannot give us the very thing that every soul deeply desires. Yes, the cross sounds foolish until the resurrection takes place. And then we experience the foolishness of God, which is wiser than men, and the weakness of God, which is stronger than men. So again, as I mentioned, all four verses come together to reveal what it means, the meaning of Jesus cleansing the temple and replacing the physical temple with his crucified and resurrected body.
Thank you once again, David. This is as much as we can do today. I pray this has been very useful to our listeners. Just reminding our listeners that the podcasts of this program, Worth Doing Badly, are available online on our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app for mobile phones. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the one that is right for you to listen to us on the go. David, once again, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.